was too serious.
I'll call this meeting of Lincoln County Board of Commissioners to order. This is Wednesday, February 28th, last day of the month, and it is 9:30, and we are in the Lincoln County Courthouse. First item on the agenda is to establish a quorum. We have all three commissioners present. Next item would be adoption of the consent calendar. These are items of a routine nature, items that have come before the commissioners before. Staff may highlight anything they wish, or I'll entertain a motion.
I would move for approval of the consent calendar as presented.
Second.
Moved and seconded, all those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries. Next item on our agenda are our decision or action items. This has to do with the new assessment taxation software. There are actually three individual items. Councilor Herbage. And.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Director Richmond, welcome.
I think we'll begin with, Todd will give you a little bit of background about the process and what these contracts will do. I'd like to touch on the legal aspect.
For the record, would you introduce yourselves?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Todd Richmond, IT Director of Lincoln County.
And Jerry Herbage, Assistant Legal Counsel.
Okay. Go ahead.
So this has been a long process, as we discussed last time. You know, we've done a lot of due diligence selecting it. System we have now is, to Jerry, is state-of-the-art for 1997.
We were state-of-the-art at one time.
Yes, we were. It's very aged and holding on by a shoestring, so now's the time to really do something. This product will give us a much more modern interface, a position for growth in the future, and we should never get stuck where we are now, where we've got a system that is ancient, and we can't fix it, we can't replace it. Very modern architecture, very modern design. So we looked at other products. Had several demos, actually two from the two contenders, and this is the one that the assessor and the treasurer have decided on. As a technical aspect, we fully support this. We're glad, and we really want to get it started.
Any questions?
No, we talked about it for a long time.
Yeah,
we get done
finally.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So I've been involved in this project at least since September, and what the board should understand, of course, is that all large contracts are generally susceptible to public contracting requirements, right? And they are in the law there to assure that you get the most bang for the buck, that is, that the contracts are cost efficient, and also that they don't involve favoritism. It's sort of a fair process, and we have gone through that. What we have done is that we have used the Washington County contract as a basis for piggybacking, and we call that cooperative permissive procurement. It's all covered in the statute, or they call it permissive cooperative procurement. And so we did publish notice that we were intending to adopt these contracts. The notice was in the Newport News on February 14th. In accordance with the law, we asked that if anybody has any comments, they let us know, and then we would then adopt some findings related to the comments. But we did publish, I checked the paper to make sure that that happened, and we received no comments. So we have gone properly through the legal process to get here, received no comments, and it's the kind of contract that should save the county money, and by doing the piggybacking that we did. And part of that is a volume thing that, you know, other counties can do that. So I've been working with counsel for the Tyler Technologies. Her name is Cheryl Parker. We met weekly for a number of, actually for some months, to get this taken care of. You have about 150 pages worth of contracts before you. I've worked closely with Todd, Joe Davidson, Linda Pilsen, John Waffenschmidt, and Eli Adam to get to where we are. As I say, involved a lot of work, and I think we're happy about where we ended up with. So we would ask the board to consider approving these three interrelated agreements.
Okay. Any questions from commissioners?
Again, something we heard last week from Joe and Linda, and now with this presentation, it just, I think, is further reassurance that this has been a very thorough process, a very good vetting, and I'm ready to move forward.
Okay. I'll entertain them up. Now, should we take each of these orders one at a time, I assume?
Let's do that since we set it up at 3-7.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we approve the proposed professional services agreement between Lincoln County and Tyler Technologies for assessment and taxation software services.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, Mr. Chair, like to approve the software licensing agreement between Lincoln County Tyler Technologies for the assessment and taxation software services.
I'll second that motion.
Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That motion carries. One more?
Yep. Oh, yes. Mr. Chair, my turn. I move that we approve the proposed maintenance and support agreement between Lincoln County and Tyler Technologies for maintenance and support for assessment and taxation software system.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 That motion also carries. All right. So shortly we'll be back to state of the art.
One thing you should know is that there's a beginning start. This is a long process. The beginning startup date will be no later than March 31, 2019. Professional services portion can take up to 4 years, so it's a long process, but we're going to get to where we need to be, and
well, in a bigger picture, yeah. That's shortly.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So for a project of this size, that's not bad.
Good point.
Good work, gentlemen, and to your colleagues who work on this as well. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, commissioners.
All right, we move on to reports, and we have a presentation on the Lincoln City Warming Shelter by Amanda Cherry Holmes. Amanda, come forward, and again, for the record, introduce yourself and tell us what's happening up in Lincoln City.
My name is Amanda Cherry Holmes, and I'm the program director for Lincoln City Warming Shelter. We've got all kinds of things going on in Lincoln City, but for now, I'll just stick to what we're doing with our shelter.
Fair enough.
I've put together a presentation, and part of it is on a time, just with a little bit of music in the background. Part of it's video interview, and then part of it is statistical information that I'll probably read off. Because sometimes, depending on the size of the screen, it'll either be easy to see or not easy to see. Thank you.
call. My story is, in 2008, I worked construction for 23 years. I lost my job in 2008. I worked some restaurants off and on. I lost my ID probably in 2011 and became homeless in 2013. And when I became homeless, I didn't have any ID anymore, so I was in a pushy car at 22. Anyways, that's a little bit of my story. And yeah, that's a question for me.
So how has our program helped you?
Program has helped very good. They're great here. Amanda got right to it. We had my birth certificate. I haven't had it since 2011. So that's, you know, quite a few years. And there's no way, but they helped me find it, because that's when you're homeless and stuff, you want to eat. You can't afford $28 a meal in. Or if you got this money in your pocket, you're using it for things to survive. And they helped me with that financially. She got it. She got a computer. She got my birth certificate here within a record 14 days or something like that. And then she went down and said, we got that. We went down and got my ID. So now I'm back on the workforce. So hopefully this spring I'll have a great job and I'll be able to pay some of this back.
And what do you think would have happened to you if our program didn't exist?
Probably would have froze to death. It gets harder every year when you're out here in this weather. It beats you down, and you get sick, and a lot of people have gone away because of that. And I know a few people have passed away just because they got too many years in the elements. You know, it's hard for somebody. You know, like they have this show on TV where the people stay in prison for 30 days. And they did not like it, the normal people. Why did somebody come spend a night on the street when it's storming 70 miles an hour and it's pouring rain sideways? Why did somebody come spend this? Why not?
How has our program helped you?
Well, if it wasn't for the warming shelter, I most definitely wouldn't feel comfortable even going into work, not being able to shower on a daily basis. I wouldn't be able to get a warm place to sit and do paperwork, a warm drink coffee, of course, meet people, and as well as find some clothing that I can wear underneath my work attire to keep warm, and blankets that help us as we sleep in our vehicle.
And also the workers that volunteer here help us a lot. Also go out of their way to help us find housing, you know, whatever they can help us with. They also do that also, so I'm very grateful.
And what do you guys think would have happened to you if our program didn't exist?
I think that I would have lost my job. I think that I would that probably started drinking more or just went on a full-fledged alcoholic binge to be out of depression because there's nothing else to do when you're in a depressed situation and to have help in some.
So she just goes on to say that it helped them a lot. The audio and the video are kind of off a little bit.
And I'm very happy that the Mormon Shelter's here. We're there in a bad relationship. And the homeless with no ID, no way to find work. The Mormon Shelter graciously helped me out. And I'm very grateful. I'd actually become a volunteer to help them. I could have been underneath the bridge, freezing cold. I'm gainfully employed with multiple jobs, and I owe a lot of this to the Mormon Shelter for you. And we really appreciate the hard work that you've done and provided for us. Just glad to be here, and hope they are able to continue on and help other people. Some of us just need a hand up instead of a hand up. As in the volunteer work, I've met a lot of the clients that have come in here. They're very, very appreciative. You know, it's a very nice thing that the city and the people here is actually helping people. We'd like to see it continue and grow and just put you a warm feeling in your heart when you're able to help those that really need it. Thank you, and that's my story. I'm sticking.
So this is normally the part where I would walk through everything that we have done. So we have a whole bunch of things that we do. Monday through Friday, we have our resource center with walk-in services. We've been open for 71 days, 257 showers, 94 guest laundry loads, 1,286 meals, and 187 unduplicated people, which means that's 106 men, 63 women, and 18 children. In addition to those services, we also have basically what we call a donation station, which means that we have jackets, we have clothes, men's, women's, sometimes we get children's, we have shoes, toiletries available, and pretty much anything that would be considered a basic need, all the way from, you know, shaving cream and a razor to shampoo and conditioner travel size, we have it all available, and that's on a walk-in basis. So anybody can come in and get that stuff if they do need it. We also have an in-house resource consultant, and basically what this is it is a service based off of a 68-question form that we have developed, which is designed specifically to try to discover what hurdles people have in their lives that keeps them homeless, and then judging on basically where they are on a scale, we formulate a customized goal plan for each person. Every single individual person has a different reason for why they're homeless, or a combination of different reasons. So rather than having a certain criteria for people to fit in order to get services, our program is flexible enough to customize to each person based on their needs. So say, for example, someone comes in and they have no identification whatsoever. You can't get a job without an ID. You can't obtain housing without a job. So there's a step one, step two, step three logical stages. And so if someone comes in without an ID, the very first priority is for them to get an ID, because you can't do anything without that. Say someone comes in and they have a criminal background. So part of this program is there's a certain section where I ask if someone has a criminal background. If they do, rather than having them put in 20 applications to 20 different places that are going to turn them down, I've already put in the time and effort to find which companies in Lincoln City as well as Newport will hire someone with a criminal background. And so they let me know that they have that issue, and so I hand them this list and say, hey, these are the places that will hire you even with a criminal background. So rather than getting turned down and losing hope, there's hope for this person. And that goes a really long way for people that are stuck outside. So far we've done 16 birth certificates, 2 social security cards, 12 IDs, and 39 bus tickets. We reserve bus tickets for a reason. So say if someone wants to just come in and just wants to, you know, hang around town, we're not willing to give bus tickets for that. They have to have a job interview, they have to be going to work, they have to have a medical appointment or a court date. They have to have an actual reason and show proof of that, whether it be, you know, they have a court date, they show me a document showing that they have a court date. They have a job interview, they let me know where it is that they're going, what part of town, so that way I can follow up with them. This is an extra service that we don't really advertise much, because if we did, we would have an overload and not be able to help anybody. So this is just kind of something that we do on the side. We have a Facebook page for the warming shelter, and then I also have my cell phone, as well as our volunteer coordinator also has her cell phone, and so we'll get calls, we'll get Facebook messages, and we've had calls at like 10:30 at night where someone from the community, it wasn't even a person looking for help, it was, you know, front desk agent at Motel 6 that had someone coming in and they're out of money, our warming shelter is not open, what do we do? So we always have a buddy system, so I call the volunteer coordinator, which also happens to be my mom, so we got a team effort thing going on. So we'll go down to the shelter and we'll put together a care package. And a care package will include warming supplies, it'll include a sack lunch for that person. We'll also make sure to do hats, gloves, scarves, a jacket, a couple of blankets, anything that we can do to help that person stay warm, as well as we also have packages that have a Mylar tent, a Mylar sleeping bag, and a Mylar blanket, all of which retain 90% of your body heat. So it will save somebody's life if that needs to happen. We've done that 12 times this season. This is probably the most important slide of this entire presentation. Having a success rate is huge when it comes to anything in terms of grants or in terms of being accountable for people believing in your program and everything that you have to offer. So for our in-house services with our resource consulting, which is the 68 question form program, we've met with 25 people, and 18 of those 25 people have either gotten a job, housing, or both, which is huge. That's a 70% success rate for us. For the people that have just retained employment, 3, which makes that 12%. Housing, 7, which makes that 28%, 4 of which were handicapped seniors. So that makes a huge difference. You know, when you're in a walker, you can't really go get a job. And then 8 people for employment and housing at 32%. We also have a job searching station that's also, this is a walk-in basis, but we count that as part of our in-house services, where we have a computer available as well as a printer so that people can fill out online applications, and they can also get assistance filling out online applications as well as putting together resumes. I'm a millennial, and so I grew up with a computer in the house, but a lot of what I have seen is a huge gap when it comes to technology and when it comes to people that were trained on technology. So I have a lot of homeless people that are coming in that were a part of a generation where computers were not in the house. So as technology advances, their education doesn't. And so most places you have to apply online. How are you supposed to do that if you don't even know how to use a computer? So that's part of what we do with helping people, is that we also help them navigate a website if they don't know how to use them, or, you know, if they have no idea what email is, then we can educate them on what email is, because a lot of times you have to have an email address to even fill out a job application. And so of this service, we have 9 people utilize that, and 7 of the 9 have retained employment. And so that's pretty high success rates for only operating for the last couple of months. In order to do something such as obtain employment, housing, or travel, you have to have a photo ID to do any of those things. In regards to travel, being a vacation destination, we end up with a lot of transient homeless, some of which have heartwarming stories about reconnecting with family members and going back to them. In order for us as a county to encourage that, people have to have a photo ID to travel. If you know, there's some people that have, you know, the feeling that we shouldn't have so many homeless here, that they should be moving on. They can't move on without an ID. You can't get on a bus without an ID. You can't get on a train. You can't get on a plane. You can't get out of here. So if we want to encourage people to move on, the best way we can do that is to make sure that they have an ID so they can. And then our emergency overnight shelter. So far, we've been open for 39 nights. We've had 467 cots occupied, 1,392 meals, and 115 unduplicated people. So just at a glance, between both of our programs, in the last basically 2.5 months, we have served 302 unduplicated people, 194 men, 90 women, 18 children, served 2,678 meals, and so far through our program, we've created 29 taxpayers, which is means a lot. You know, when these people are on the street, we're bringing them back up, and now they are contributing back to society, and that's what we want. This last slide is one of our people that came in. We helped him get an ID. And unfortunately, with all of the politics that have been happening in Lincoln City, we had our inclement weather taken away. We were able to open normally below 40 degrees and inclement weather. And due to all of the issues that have been going on, we were still able to function below 40 degrees. However, our inclement weather was taken away. During which this man, Larry Rivlin, was really sick and came into our resource center. We could only do so much during the day. But because he was out there for so many nights during the inclement weather, his body was not able to recover from the disease that he had in his body, and he did pass away. So that's just a reminder of how real this actually is, that people really truly are losing their lives without having these services. And in order for us to continue to save people's lives as well as change people's lives, we have to have more support from the city, from the county, from the state. We need to have more support, period. And that's for all nonprofit organizations that work for homelessness, not just us.
Mr. Chair,
may I? You may.
Thank you for a great presentation, and thank you for the fantastic work that you and your volunteers are doing. This is amazing. It's inspiring. Could you talk about your operational budget as it stands now, funding sources, and your long-term sustainability?
So as it stands right now, we are currently working off the city budget. We do have some donations that come in, unrestricted funds, which allow us to do things like the extra stuff. Because with the city grant, we have restrictions on what we're allowed to use it for. It has to be either for rent, mortgage, or leaseholder improvements. It has to be for basic supplies. So basically, it has to be completely program-oriented. We can't, you know, we can't use it for food, we can't use it for a part-time salary, we can't use it for anything like that. And so in order for us to continue doing this, we're going to have to get more funding sources. Currently, the board's working on a few different funding sources, one of which is the Celeste Tribal Foundation. So we're working with them on getting a grant going. Hopefully, I was hoping that after this presentation that maybe there's a chance that we could get some funding through the county. And basically, as this program continues and our statistics stay within, you know, our 70% range, we'll be able to qualify for more grants. Because as it stands right now, finding grants for just an emergency shelter is unheard of. It just doesn't happen.
And you do have 501c3 status?
We do. We are an official 501c3 status organization, and we were established in 2015, and so that also helps our case quite a bit, because when it comes to writing grants, if you are an organization that has been functioning for 3+ years, then they start taking you seriously.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to throw out an idea to you and to Commissioner Thompson, and this would just be the start of a conversation that would have to have many steps, I'm sure, but that we at least consider establishing in the next fiscal year budget some kind of a funding program that could conceivably offer targeted sustainable support, not only to this program, but I think you're aware that in Newport, a day center has opened up to serve homeless populations. They are trying to get their building outfitted so that it could qualify as an overnight shelter as well. In the meantime, they're continuing to operate an overnight shelter at the Lincoln County Commons, and also potentially to Seashore Family Literacy, which is doing some of this same work in Walport. We've talked about how
homelessness impacts county services for years, and just, you know, further confirmation to me that I think this is something that's at least worthy of serious consideration is the fact that this was specifically called out not once, but twice in the Soybring report that provided an evaluation not only of our human services program, but of our human services needs in the community. Essentially, I believe there were two places in the document where they suggested that supporting programs that provide emergency shelter and help people connect with resources would be something that would be not only effective in improving and saving lives, but ultimately help lessen the burden on county services in the long run. And how this would be structured, how much we would set aside, I don't know. I just want to maybe put that out to open a conversation.
Well, I thought we were funding the nonprofit organizations.
We are.
But and I thought that was the source we were doing. Creating another source concerns me. Why aren't they in the mix?
Well, they could be. They conceivably could be. That's not
trying to create another leg or a bureaucracy. I'd rather keep it all in one funding channel.
The only challenge there, I see, Commissioner, is that that's a fixed fund, and even though we try to bump it up each year, it's always a very competitive fund. You know, and usually organizations do not get what they ask for and oftentimes what they need. You know, just one example I would say for a parallel to consider, look at our Community and Economic Development Fund. We do our annual $100,000 competitive grant program out of that fund, but we also set aside, Wayne, I believe, is it $25,000 a year to the Small Business Development Center? We, a long time ago,
$30,000.
Okay. Yeah, a fixed $30,000 allocation out of that same fund every year to the Community College Small Business Development Center, because we believe that does enough ongoing economic development benefit that we said they shouldn't have to be in the mix and competing every year to be funded or not know for sure if they're going to be funded or how much they're going to be funded. And just, it's my personal opinion. And
well, let me say this about that. Yeah.
Sure.
That's funds that come from the lottery funds from the state. That's pass-through money that's aimed at economic development.
Right.
That's considerably different than taking what I think you're asking is general fund
yes.
Which we already have a section that we can fund. Now, whether we bump up or not, that's a decision that this board or future boards will make. But when you create another pot on top of it, I've been involved in this for a lot of years. I've seen different organizations come and go. There was one in Lincoln City, remember? That
right.
We funded, and there was one over here by the school that comes and goes.
Right.
I think it's more important to make sure we put the funds there and let the boards make the decisions of where to spend it, rather than us create a separate channel.
For designated organizations. Well, what about this? Let me throw this out as an alternative for consideration. I think the Nonprofit Social Service Fund is now at 165, I believe. It was 160 for several years. And we've really, you know, because our budgets have been tight overall, we've really just kind of inched it up, trying to keep pace with inflation. Maybe as an alternative, consider a more significant bump in that fund next year. And again, I don't know whether that would be 20, 30,000 more, or exactly how much, with the understanding that, you know, that the pot would be bigger and that would provide an opportunity for these folks to come in and the Newport Warming Shelter as well.
Now,
but
I'm
not restricting it to that.
Sorry for going back and forth here, but this, I'm going to say this, I feel a lot more comfortable when I have matches from the cities, because this is really a lot of times a city problem.
Well, Lincoln City is funding you to the tune of how much?
We were gifted $45,000.
And that was one time or ongoing?
One time.
Have they indicated whether they might do ongoing funding?
It was out of capital, so I doubt it. And we've also had we've had a very serious lack of financial support, mainly because of organizations not having the structure, probably, to believe in, is what I'm guessing.
Well, this was a topic of conversation at our joint work session with the city of Newport. We're also talking about the warming shelter that is temporarily housed at the fairgrounds building. And, Commons, yes, thank you. I think there's certainly a need, and I'm certainly interested in ways to try to help. I think that the nonprofit social allocation program is a good program. I think it tries to recognize the different needs and allocate limited resources. Whether or not part of the budget process we increase those resources, I'm certainly open to that discussion. I guess I would say maybe we continue the conversations with the cities, all three of them, and see if there are some matching programs or some unique ways that the county can provide support.
Maybe say to Lincoln City, if you'll provide this program with X dollars of operating support in your next fiscal budget, we'll match it dollar for dollar, something like that.
Council Belmont, I believe, will be having conversations with Spencer at the City of Newport. Maybe we can broaden those conversations to include City of Lincoln City.
And we have had some of those conversations in the past, but now I think you're giving us some direction to really pursue those more. Mm-hmm. And the timing couldn't be better. Budget. Great timing.
That's kind of funny because I keep hearing that lately about timing.
The reality is those constituents are the city's constituents too. So
I'm hearing two things in terms of as we put together proposals for the budget. One is that you'd like to do something.
Yes.
Number one. Number two, though, is you're looking to partner with programs that are established and that are funded by cities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'll look into doing that with the cities, with our partners there, and see what we can do and put together. And we'll probably be talking to you a little bit more about budgets and things.
Sure. Not negative against you.
Oh, no, that's okay. I'm ready for it. Go for it. Throw it at me.
Go in this business, and people with your enthusiasm, and if you have a board behind you,
I do,
can do wonderful things. But I watch these boards sometimes go metamorphosize, and then it goes away. That's why I think it's so important that it goes to something like the nonprofit organization that recognizes what's going on in the area and matches it up with the other demands that are there. Believe me, it's not. I encourage you to go forward and do exactly what you're doing. Bring it in front of people and say, this is what we want to do. But 20 years from now, your organization may change, not because of just lack of maybe some change in leadership.
It's definitely a guarantee that it'll change. It has been changing since the beginning. 2015 is when the warming shelter officially was established. However, 2 years prior, it started out at the Congregational Church. So the idea of the warming shelter actually started in 2013. So 2013, 2014, Congregational Church was hosting it. Then it got too big. So then founders came together, which is Richard Gartrell is the founder of Lincoln City Warming Shelter. Then they actually established the 501c3 and had that going. Then the first year it was at the Congregational Church. Second year was at the Congregational Church, and we also had another location specifically for families, as well as we expanded our services to include shower vouchers, to include bus tickets. We had more things that we were doing. And then this year is basically the third expansion of the warming shelter. And so as it stands right now, we're at the Old Taft Fire Station, which allowed us to expand our services to create the resource center. After this, after the warming shelter season ends, the resource center will continue. The board has decided that this is a good program. It is valid. We have a really high success rate. There's no reason not to continue it. And as we go through after the warming shelter season, the board is currently looking for a lot, preferably outside of Lincoln City, so that we can put our donated prefabricated steel building. Last year, we had a volunteer couple that donated this building to us at full capacity. It is 6,000 square feet and two stories. So it's a pretty significant size building. And our plans are, once we actually get into this building on our own piece of property, then what we want to do is establish a transitional housing program as well as a warming shelter. So changing, most definitely, constantly.
Bill, what was the name of the organization that was next to the middle school? I used to contribute to a lot, or never.
Oh, are you thinking of contact information?
Contact.
Yeah, did so much good for so many years, but unfortunately.
You're almost identical to an organization that was here in Newport, and it changed boards, and it went away after several years of great success.
Right, they were never offering shelter, but they were sure doing, you know, Contact did a great job of helping people recover their IDs, connect them with services, provide bus tickets, so very similar in mission in some ways. Yeah.
Be careful. You got to train a board to come up to replace you as it goes on if you want to have longevity.
So I'd like to make sure, it may take some time for, I think, some of the dialogue that's necessary. And as I see, you know, Lincoln City, you've got a building and the city's contributing, so how can the county support that? It may be in a different form than what is here in Newport, where the county's more or less contributing a building. So I think there's some details there that can be worked out in those conversations, but I want to make sure that you're aware of the nonprofit social allocation program. Those applications will be available, I'm assuming, in a month or two.
I think so.
April-ish. And the nonprofit social allocation looks at allocating dollars, and it's really based on a couple of three criteria, I guess. Number one is the ability to leverage the money from the county with other funds. So again, working with the city and other grant providers would be in your favor. Certainly, the lack of alternatives is a factor in this, how those monies are allocated, and what other partners you're working with. So I think you've certainly got some strong reasons, criteria that would help you be successful in that program. And so I want to just make sure that you're aware of that and watch for those, the announcement for those applications being available.
And a lot of nonprofits do receive operating funding out of that, including My Sister's Place, Meriden House, several of the food pantries.
CASA program.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I'd say is you talked about individuals that have a criminal record and the difficulty that they have in finding jobs. I chair the consortium board that oversees the Workforce Investment Board for our four counties, Columbia, Placid, five counties. The executive director sitting in the back and holding up five fingers. So, anyhow, I chair the consortium board, and one of the things that we're talking about is a second chance program where we're trying to identify employers and make them aware of the opportunities and the value of giving individuals with a criminal record a second chance. So that is a program that's being worked on outside of just the area that you're involved. So I think certainly a worthy effort. I think you're doing a great job, and I think we'd like to find some ways that are appropriate to help. Anything else?
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much for your time, and I have some business cards and brochures that I'd be happy to give you guys if you like.
Make sure that Christy gets one of those, too.
Okay.
I see there's some people in the audience that may want to comment on this. Do we want to allow them to do that, or wait for a constituent?
I'll wait for a constituent.
Okay.
We're right there, anyways.
We're just about there. We got commissioner reports, and then we'll give the audience a chance to add their comments. Commissioner reports.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Hunt.
Get me informed.
I know we're all very busy, in addition to tending to things at home, working on issues of concern over in Salem, and I am feeling very optimistic now about the one bill that I've put the most energy into this month and I've talked about before. The document recording fee for housing construction and homeless services, that the current fee surcharge for recording documents
related to real estate transactions in county clerk's office is now $20. That's where it stood since 2013. A bill was introduced and moved out of committee that would take that all the way to $75, a pretty big ask. But on Friday, the Oregon Association of Realtors, which is probably the key lobby group that can influence the success or defeat of this bill, said they would support it if the increase was trimmed back to $60. So it's still got to move through both houses, but the word I'm hearing in Salem is that with the realtors on board, it now has an excellent chance of bipartisan success, and the governor has said she will sign it. So what is that going to do? That's going to put about, depending on the level of real estate activity in the state, but the estimate is that's going to put about $50 million a year more into three existing funding pipelines that are administered through Oregon Housing and Community Services. One is for emergency homeless assistance programs, which are administered through community action agencies here in Lincoln County. It's Community Services Consortium, working with families in crisis, you know, helping them, because oftentimes they can get them into a rental assistance program for an apartment, but they can't use those funds for move-in costs, first and last month's deposit. Maybe the family has to stay in a hotel for a few days before the new apartment's ready. And CSC, every year, they run out of that money before the fiscal year is over, and they have to turn families in need away. With more money in that pot, it's less likely that CSC is going to be turning families away. The other is first-time homebuyer assistance. And again, every county is served by a home buyer education program and assistance program. In Lincoln County, it is Willamette Neighborhood Housing, which is based in Corvallis, but also serves clients in Lincoln County. They help a family that's ready to make that big move into buying their first home, get their credit ready, negotiate the process of applying for a mortgage, and also there are some funds directly to help them buy homes. And then the biggest amount of this pot of money goes into the OHCS Grant Construction Fund. And people like Northwest Coastal Housing, formerly our Community Development Corporation, Housing Authority, not only nonprofit developers, but private developers. There's a private developer out of Portland who's really interested in Lincoln County, and he is looking at a site in North Newport where he said potentially he can do, if it all pencils out, up to 100 new apartments that would rent to people earning between 60 and 80% of area median income. And he said, no guarantees, of course, but if this extra money goes into that pot, he figures it just really increases the odds of a project like that being funded. Yes,
sir. So, I've been down this trail several times.
Uh-huh.
And what's the allocation method to make sure it's distributed out around the state?
Well, Oregon Housing, all these programs, they have criteria that looks at not only serving communities of color, but communities of poverty like ours.
You missed my question.
Oh, they have criteria, and the legislature watches them like a hawk.
Okay, what are the criteria? Is it based on population? Is it based by county? That's the key.
It's based on need and by region, by need in each county. They look at, and they look especially at underserved populations. And Lincoln County, I think, is what, 15% people of color, primarily Hispanic and Native American. But where we score big points is our poverty. I mean, we've got one of the worst rural poverty rates in the state, so that gives us points.
So, but my point is I've been involved in these kinds of things where you said $50 million. Well, that's statewide.
Right.
And if you only wind up with about 2% of it, you don't get much.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, what's our breakout in Lincoln County? you know, if it doesn't do us any good,
it will.
Well,
and I can't guarantee, because we don't get, you know, not every county's going to get projects every year, but I mean, like, you know, the only thing I'll go back to, remember 2007 when there was $16 million statewide for permanent supportive housing projects, because, which isn't a lot of money statewide, but because I was on it, a lot of other people was on top of it, agencies. So that's how we got Turnhouse and Pelican Place. We got more units out of that funding round than any other county except Multnomah.
So,
I'm not going to guarantee that's going to happen again.
I'm going to ask you again then. Please come back and tell us
what percentage of money breakout
comes to the county.
Yes.
Because tell me it's $50 million to the state, and if 99% of it winds up in Portland.
Well, probably half of it will, because half the population is in Portland, 25 million, but still 25 million new for the rest
all
of the state.
All I'm asking, Bill,
that's reasonable.
You're the person that's in the location.
Yes.
Come back and report to us what's there. I mean, I may think it's the best thing to block Northport,
I'm telling you skepticism, but
as a county commissioner, my job is to supply stuff to Lincoln County. Mm-hmm. And we're going to pay a lot of these fees into the housing. I always worry when I see a fee attached to housing that then pays for housing without knowing, and we've seen it with our money that goes through the clerk. It doesn't come back in the form that we are a debtor, or we may sometimes be ahead. So come back and tell me the specifics to Lincoln County if you can. You're the person that knows the most about this.
And if this gives you any reassurance, I've talked to a lot of rural legislators who have, you know, from Eastern Oregon, from down the valley, from elsewhere on the coast. They're going to be bird dogging this real closely. They promise me they'll be asking the same kind of questions you are.
Okay. Well, and I would add that certainly let's be aware of the language that determines how it's going to be allocated, and if there's an opportunity to strengthen it in our favor, we want to be sure that we support that.
Actually, one thing Oregon Housing is talking about, because, you know, and then too, I know sometimes state agencies talk a good game but don't always deliver, but the current director of Oregon Housing and Community Services, Margaret Salazar, she went on a statewide listening tour. She had a session in Lincoln City with about three dozen people, and she has also made connections with Association of Oregon Counties, League of Oregon Cities, and she is talking about creating some kind of program in the agency. She said maybe a couple of full-time people who would specifically be assigned to work with local communities, like rural communities, exclusively for rural communities that don't have the staff capacity always to go after these funding streams as aggressively as the big population centers do, because she knows that that puts us at a competitive disadvantage. And she specifically said, this is one way that I think we can help rural communities close the gap. So
to me, that would be a good example of something we'd want to support.
Yes,
I'm looking forward to the details.
I don't know if that will actually be included in the legislation itself, or if it might be done through an executive order of the governor or an administrative rule, but AOC, LOC, and Oregon Housing are all talking about getting that program started.
Okay. Good. Commissioner Thompson.
Well, the one project that I've been spending a lot of time on in this special session is PMEC. Civic Marine Energy Center, the test site off of Lincoln County here, right off of Newport, with Hatfield Marine Science Center and OSU. It looks to me like we've got a real good shot at it. We won't know until the last minute of this session, when it probably comes in a Christmas tree bill, but the letter being signed on is a big deal. It's still bird dogging, it's still there, meeting the top of the people when I can. Goes to Ways and Means Committee. There's not a lot you can do at this point. We have to just write it out and hope that the Coastal Caucus and the leadership sees the wisdom in it, because there's actually $40 million in that. And plus, in the future, if it's successful and we get people coming to test it, it's going to bring a lot more money to the county over time. And money, probably some jobs from out of the area, but there might be some jobs too from the area And the more money you have rolling in the county, the better off we are. And so I'm encouraged that it's been 5 years in the work. It's been 5 years or 6 years since you worked on it.
Yeah, I was on a committee that worked to have that site selected against, I believe it was a site off a report that was also under consideration. So it's been a long time. But again, this correct me, Commissioner, but this would be the only grid-connected test site in the Northwest along
in the United States.
United States. Yeah. I thought it was a pretty broad region.
To my knowledge, it's great.
So that, again, I
think it's showing
some potential there.
That we did an ocean acidification meeting. It was a bill introduced in the last session by Arnie Roblin to start to bring some of the scientists and people together to condense some of the information on ocean acidification and the consequences, which actually fits perfectly into the discussion of carbon tax credits and clean air, because the carbon that goes up into the atmosphere from the land goes in the ocean and is changing the ocean chemistry. The scientists are talking about what the consequences will be to future with global warming and ocean acidification, what the consequences will be to the ocean agricultural production off of Lincoln County. And at this point, nobody has the answer, but at least they're having the discussion and they're finding gaps in information that interested me. I thought there was a lot more continuous data being collected in the ocean on this subject. And most of it's coming from the estuaries and bays. There was only 5 sites, and 3 of those were associated with the Washington Science Cable that's out here, and then a couple other sites. So there's gaps, and that's what that group will be doing, is trying to understand this massive information and try to consolidate it and then try to give us some directions to go.
Good. I'll just briefly report that we're still waiting for the governor to make appointments to the Maritime Task Force. I expect to be appointed to that as a representative from the governor's statewide workforce investment board, but we continue to be hopeful of those appointments occurring shortly. And then also had an opportunity to attend the community health assessment process that is being started as the county updates its community health improvement plan. Some good discussion on issues relative to public health and potentially some behavioral health and some of the issues that we've heard about earlier today. So was a good first step.
Yes, sir. Wayne, would you mind giving a little synopsis of the bill that we discussed yesterday that could have consequences on building codes?
Well, there's been some talk at the state level, actually, between Legislative Council's office and the Building Codes Division, and representing them as the Attorney General's office, about programs across the state that have contracted for building inspection services. So these are, the building inspectors that come out when new construction goes on or remodeling or anything like that. A number of municipalities are having a very, very, very difficult time hiring qualified, certified people to do these particular tasks. So they've had to rely on hiring contractors. There's a few firms statewide that actually provide these services and do it for a number of municipalities. And so the issue that was raised is an interesting legal issue. Only lawyers love this kind of stuff, right? But it's the question of whether or not that hiring an outside contractual firm violates state prohibitions against delegating the authority of the municipality to someone who's not an employee or a direct representative of the municipality. Again, esoteric legal arguments. I find them not very compelling, but somebody else does. So
would you not do worry about that, but would you talk about the consequences?
The consequences of
what the people need to be aware of. That's why I wanted to bring it up. I'm not sure the commissioners even know.
The bill. As I understand it, the way the bill would work is that municipalities, including the county and at least in Lincoln County, Newport, and Lincoln City, which have their own building programs, would have to employ the building official slash building inspector. And there's all these definitions of what constitutes what. But you'd have to, they'd have to be an employee of the municipality. Consequence in Lincoln County is right now, currently, the city of Lincoln City does not have an employed building official. They contract. They're one of those entities that contracts the services. They're going to have to scramble to find it. They're either going to have to try and come to us and contract for those services. And we have a hard enough time ourselves filling and keeping the inspector positions together here. So it's not something that we could, you know, we'd have to think about this a lot, how we do it. Or they abandon their program, which is what is going to happen, I think, in a lot of areas of the state. And they basically hand it back. The way the law works is if Lincoln City elects not to engage in those services anymore, it becomes the county's responsibility.
Oh,
and we've got to do it. And we, in the past, have actually provided building inspection services. I know during my tenure here, we've done building inspection services in Lincoln City. So consequences could be huge for us.
Well, it's, I'm going to jump in this because it has a lot more consequence than that to all the contractors.
Oh, yeah.
We're a growth area.
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden we have to take on the other communities' building codes division, and we know how hard it is to find these types of people. It's one of the bigger challenges we face. We could be in, we could really set back our growth simply because they can't get the permits. And if we don't like it, we could turn it back to the state too, and then everything would have to be run out of the state, which would be under such a burden. But this piece of legislation concerns me because here we're talking about all these things and growth and development, and whether it's building a homeless shelter, all this, if you can't get the codes, you can't get the job done.
Yeah.
So,
well, to me, it's a bill looking to fix a non-existent problem.
That's the way I actually look at it.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's working well now. So that is a bill we've discussed at the AOC where I co-chair the governance committee. Mm-hmm. So it's,
well, what I'm hearing in the back room is this
gonna pass.
May pass unless somebody gets on top of it. And once it's passed, then we have to live with it.
Yep. More to come. All right, no more commissioner reports. Constituent input, this is an opportunity for individuals to address the Board of Commissioners on any item of interest. We ask you to limit your comments to 5 minutes, and please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, I'm Dave Peltier. Thank you for grappling with these difficult issues. Years ago, Richard Attenborough did a great movie called Gandhi, and Mohandas K. Gandhi was portrayed by Ben Kingsley in an impeccable style of having all the nuances and eccentricities of Mohandas Gandhi. Gandhi's work was touched upon the Harijan, the untouchables of India. The homeless are the untouchables of America. So I'm grateful that we're going to make some inroads in funding and organizational development. The Lincoln City Warming Shelter has a wonderful program. They're very solid. They have an excellent board. I attended a board meeting. Patrick Alexander, the board president, a great guy. Wonderful, dedicated staff persons and volunteers. The $41,000 in the marijuana money, if you could please consider giving $10,000 to the Lincoln City Warming Shelter and $10,000 to the HELP program in South Lincoln County, which we have young people on the precipice of further damaging their lives. And the HELP program, Katie Townsend does a great job, and it's linked with the Lincoln County School District, of which we have 760 homeless at-risk children in our district. We're number one per capita in the state of Oregon. Years ago, I lived in Humboldt County, California, where the Redwoods are, and they have a home that was donated to them that became a foundation research center. So a myriad of nonprofit corporations could go and research the grants. These are, you know, national, international grants and state and local grants. This could advance our county. And we could fund our nonprofits and strengthen our human safety net by having a research center in our community here. It's something to think about in the future. It would help us so much. Doug, you and I have been talking now and then about the costs of homelessness. If we have a continuum of service where we have a shelter all winter, every single night, we can make more inroads in helping our people. We have veterans out there. We have a lot of women who are vulnerable of being harmed out there. We have sick persons, disabled people. As you know, many of these subgroups already I've explained to you guys. A lot of people are vulnerable, and they could pass away on our streets if we don't have adequate facilities during the winter months. At St. Stephen's Church, the pastor, Judith Jones, and I came upon a lady, a Native American lady, who was sleeping on the concrete under a flimsy blanket. We brought her into the office, gave her a warm drink. A church lady kindly drove her up to the Lincoln City Warming Shelter. That night was extremely cold. I would put it in the 80 percentile that woman would have died on our streets that night, based on 25 years of working on the homeless issue and trained as a social worker type of person. Let's prevent the deaths. Let's help the homeless. Let's get them in with these wonderful, important programs. It'll save our county money. It'll save our society money in police contacts and jail time and social services time and prison time. We can actually offset a lot of these negative costs that are intrinsic to the homeless predicament. Let's move forward now. Once and for all, it's been many years of effort. By the way, we feed homeless children in South Lincoln County in the Seashore Family Literacy Program and the Old Walport Middle School. The Newport Warming Shelter also could be deserving of some of that money, that $41,000. That money comes from the sale of marijuana in our communities. Let's take that money and do something really cool and really good with it.
Okay. Thank you, David. Next.
So if you got a job as an inspector, I'm a
construction worker, and train me, I'll work for you guys.
Identify yourself.
Kevin Ward, I live here in Newport, and I'm speaking on the homeless. Years ago, I thought of an idea called a bunkhouse bus cooperative. You'd have a supervisor in the bus and three workers, and you would contract work in the woods, harvesting, wildcrafting, thinning, cutting firewood, different things. So you're taking people that are untrained, unskilled, and putting them out non-impact work that's not going to hurt them. They can advance and do other kind of work, stuff like that. The greatest difficulty I've found over the many years I've worked with homeless people from Sausalito, California, with the old derricks in Sausalito, which are now worth $1 million, the property, to this area. This county is, it's absurd what goes on in the bush. I was canning tuna and taking cases of food to the homeless. One particular campsite was up on Highway 20. And it would be great for a while, and then you'd get druggies in there and stuff like that, people crapping on a guy's tent and stuff and laying on the street on the highway when they're stoned or on heavy drugs. My fear when I walk the dogs in the woods is spent needles and stuff like that. I mean, my skin crawls when I'm out there and you see some of the sights. I worked in Corvallis for 5 years with homeless and had a ministry there. People died because they froze. A grant for $12,000 came up. They were going to build at the park there a center for these showers and a place to poop, but they gave it to somebody to do a study on the homeless instead of using the money. All they do there is once it gets so profuse where you've got 2 tons of garbage over here and defecation is go in, clear the brush, clear the garbage. Now you can see if anybody's camping out there. Another one was a campsite across the river. Boys from the high school dressed up in camo went over there with baseball bats and beat the hell out of these homeless people. Brad Roop had neck surgery. Thank God he didn't get hurt. Another kid was in the theater and some high school kids were throwing popcorn at him. He jumps up and pulls a knife out. Well, they were going to run to the cops. And I says, wait a minute. He just got beat up last night, so he's kind of jumpy, you know, so they didn't do that. But it takes a personal touch, but Florida's done a great thing. They have a housing center. It costs a lot of money, but 250 people have a place to live. Once they're sheltered, then they're safe, then they can find employment. The bunkhouse bus system, you would take him mobily in the bus, out on site, in the woods, away from the town. They're working in the bush, making money, so they're not get a buck. They call it like Polynesian paralysis in Hawaii. Don't pay them on Wednesday. They won't be on the construction site the next day. So basically, you're managing their funds, you're managing their life because they cannot do it. And so I know I love the shelter. I volunteered there a couple of times, stuff like that. And it's great for, you know, you give them a meal. Let's teach them how to fish. Let's teach them how to work. Let's get their let's get the structure back together that's necessary, because it's not safe for us in the county as citizens. It's not fair for us in the county as citizens, the people out there, the way they interact. And that's what I got to say for that. I don't know what. Oh, and then the food share, we can, the bycatch that we're talking about in the fishing industry was donated a lot of times to be processed. We don't have a processing center. One fishing family has a site down South Beach, but a canning center where we're actually putting up stuff like this, and an exchange where we're exchanging food processed here. We go to the valley and bring back tons of harvested food there with gleaners. The gleaners. So, okay, my time's up, but just we could develop the resources, but you've got to have people in that position doing that. It can't just be a volunteer thing, because they burn out. And like Terry's saying, you got to train your people coming in behind you, because you're going to burn out.
All right.
Thanks, Doug. Terry.
Bill. Yep. Forward.
Hey. Excuse me. Again, please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Jeff Austin, and I work with the HELP program down in Walport. I partially run the Joy Club. We take at-risk teenagers under the poverty line, many of whom are homeless, and basically help them out. My job is to teach them life skills. Okay. There's a few things I'd like to address. First off, you guys have a whole lot of financial things I don't even know about. I'm listening to what Terry was sharing, you know, about what you're trying to bring in here. And I see the value of that. And I understand that every penny that you guys have has to be allocated very carefully. Okay. I want to address one thing to you, Terry, is the concern of boards burning out and programs falling out, money being wasted. I want to say on my side of things that we, the people who are working on the street, we never quit. Okay, we use the resources that we had. When the programs quit, we reached out into the communities. We brought in the resources that we could find. Okay. Frankly, man, I'm giving shoes. I'm giving shoes to kids that are in the third grade that are torn up and their socks are wet. And I ask them where they live. And they're in the woods. And their family, okay? And they hide behind the cracks and they don't get the resources, okay? Now, the reason I came here is because what I directly saw in Amanda and her mom and the Lincoln Warming Center is a program profile that works. You know, we can put a lot of money into things that don't work, okay? But we can use what we have to strengthen what is working. You know, money is only really not even the biggest issue. I mean, yeah, there's the funding that needs to be put into it, but there's a lot of stuff that we can do simply with tenacity on the part of the warming shelter, influence and experience on all the levels that you guys have. I came to address only one specific issue, and that is inclement weather. Okay, it's dysfunctional to say that we have to have a set weather ceiling, Okay, if it's 40 degrees or not, we're shut down or we're open. The homeless don't know whether they can go to this place if it's going to be open. We shut it down when a storm is coming in that's more dangerous than would be under the criteria of having it open. I think, honestly, I'm pretty sure that this is about, between the city and the shelters. I'm not sure any of the criteria of what establishes these levels, but just to use your influence to make this go away to where the shelters themselves can establish when they're open. You know, because we have the resources of manpower to take care of people. And you know what? They're not all the scary people that you think. I mean, scary people can be homeless. Homeless people can be scary. You know what? But honestly, a lot of these people are disenfranchised by a lot of different circumstances that have happened in their life. You lose your wallet, you know, you're dead meat, and you know how easy it is to lose your wallet. Okay, the reason I came here to present is because in the South County, where I live, where I work, we have, zero programs directly in the county that I know of that are accessible unless you come to Newport. Okay. What I like about the Lincoln City Warming Shelter is they have the tenacity, they have the experience, and they have a model program and structure, you know, that can be backed up and that can be learned and can be put in places where others live and work, such as the South County. I know I'm almost done, so I will just say one thing. If you guys can address in your influence simply the issue of getting inclement weather so that we can open the shelters when it's available and needed. I don't know how you can do it, but that is our need. Thank you.
Commissioner. Normally, I don't respond to second
thank you, sir.
To this kind of thing, but first of all, don't make the mistake, please, that I didn't say wasted.
No.
I said your organizations change.
Yes.
And the money that's spent there now is not wasted. And it may change, and then another organization may be in your place, but is doing great things, and it's important that we have a system so that we can make it work through so that who's ever doing the most effective management is the people who get it. The other thing is I really like what you just said, because being a fisherman and being in the ocean and knowing what a threshold temperature for a person that's used to living in a house is the temperature in the room.
Right.
But a person that lives in the open and bad weather understands that there's the feeling, depending on what the moisture is, what the wind is, and you're right. If you have a rain and you have wind, your true temperature may be at 45 degrees, but the feeling on the body, especially if it's wet, is to the level of exposure that can kill you.
Yeah.
And we see it all the time in the ocean. Especially young people that aren't experienced, don't wear the right clothes.
Yeah.
You don't have the option of having the right clothes. And they need us to think about what the true temperature is. And today, the weather forecast will give you that, of what the feeling temperature is, instead of the temperature that's just in the room type temperature. So thanks for highlighting that. I think it's a good point that needs to be considered by these organizations and look at what the true temperature of the body it's exposed to that.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, I think all three of the commenters had ideas that are worthy of discussion, certainly as we work with the different cities trying to address the problem.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Good points.
Yep.
All right. Any other constituent input? All right. Seeing no one come forward.
Can I say one thing about the construction thing and the inspectors?
You've had your opportunity, but make
it
brief.
Well, I was talking about homeless on that account.
Well, make it brief.
Okay, on the inspection thing, I had a house inspected. The guy did a bum job. He didn't know what I said on the trial, where a guy didn't even know the code, and the guy got hurt. And then I met the president of the Oregon home inspection thing, and he did a great job on the house. And there was so much wrong, it was unseen, but he saw it. And so a trained inspector is essential for the safety and the welfare of children.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Again, our next meeting of the Board of Commissioners will be on Wednesday, March 7th.
Mr. Chair, may I mention that I will be absent from that meeting? I am traveling to Washington, D.C., National Association of Counties Legislative Conference. I'm a presenter there, and also the County Commissioner delegation from Oregon will on Tuesday be making a series of visits to our congressional offices in D.C., and then Wednesday I will be en route in the air back to Newport at that time.
All right, very good.
Thank you.
Again, we'll be meeting here Wednesday, March 7th at 9:30 a.m. here.
Can I ask a question? Doug, you're planning on being gone too.
I will be attending a city insurance services conference in San Diego, but I believe we're arranging to have a telephone.
We're going to try and keep the agenda very short for that particular meeting, and we'll have it available with your phone to do
that. Because I was going, wow.
I plan to conduct
we'll take care of business
telephonic.
That's it.
Terry's running the whole show that day.
Okay, so we're adjourned.